Hey, it's your man KJ. We back. Dr. Sai, what you got for me this year?
You rocking with the village. Let's get it.
We back, y'all. 2017. Chance, my brother, what's good with you? How you feeling, man?
Man, I'm doing good.
That's what's up.
Getting ready for the holidays, man.
What you mean getting ready, bro? You better be done.
I'm late.
Bruh, really? Like, for real, though?
Amazon Prime.
Oh,
Amazon
that's right.
Prime.
They about to get all your money this year.
Prime. No, I'm good.
Okay. Yeah, that two-day delivery, though. Yeah, I feel you. But anyways, Village, you are live with the Village. You are politicking with the Village. So let's just jump into these topics, man, because I know we grown men got grown men things to do after this. Let's talk about this GOP tax plan. It's actually gone back down because from what I'm understanding, I didn't get to fully dive into what was going on with it. But it violates some kind of sanctions with Senate or something of that nature. So I'm over here trying to pull up links and articles about it. And I was wondering, what have you heard in regards to the GOP tax plan coming back down?
So it violated three Senate rules.
Okay.
I don't know exactly. I haven't had time to look and see exactly what the three rules were.
Yeah, I'm actually on Google right now.
Okay, so they have to go back and address those issues. It's nothing that's going to stop the House from passing it, but it just shows the sloppiness and their willingness to you know, they're just trying to rush something through completely in a partisan manner, and to kind of sidestep rules to disenfranchise the minority party.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, all of this is going to come back and bite them in the rear end. You know, the effects of the tax plan itself, I mean, in all fairness, it is yet to be seen.
Okay. So I pulled up a link here, and I went to just found something quick on ABC News that says Democrats say three provisions in the GOP tax bill violate Senate rules and will be removed, forcing House to re-vote on Wednesday. Now, it doesn't quite give a really good synopsis of what happened, but it says here, a majority that's been... Of course, I want to get pop-ups. A majority that's been defined by inaction will now be defined by action. A far-reaching and partisan action with unpredictable political consequences. To Republican, the tax overhaul heading towards President Donald Trump's desk is a promise kept and a gift that will keep on giving. They argue that fulfilling the GOP's vision of lower taxes will spur economic growth, aka trickle-down effect, a rocket fuel for the economy. In the president's telling, that will spill into banks' accounts, large and small. Results are going to make this popular, House Speaker Paul Ryan declared today. But to Democrats and some moderate voices in the GOP, the tax bill is a Trump-era trap that could spark a voter backlash. It is telling that not a single Democrat was tempted to vote yes. The only votes that broke against party lines come from a dozen House Republicans who voted no. The danger for Republicans is deeper than passing an unpopular bill along party lines. It's a it It is passing an unpopular and partisan bill that turns Trump's own brand of economic populism on his head. Okay, so what I'm really looking forward here, and I really need to know what was violated, what Senate rules were violated. And I don't have that information in front of me, Village, so please forgive me. We are literally, you know, we hopped on here a few moments ago and got it going. But the truth of the matter is, this tax bill was not meant for the middle class or the lower class. Let's be honest here, Chance. You know what I mean? This was strictly about padding the pockets of the elite, making the rich richer, essentially. And at this point, you know, for me, if you can't see this, then I don't know what to tell you. So I'm going to throw it back to you, man. Go ahead.
All right. So, I mean, it, you know, the Republican mindset is if a poor person pays $100 in taxes, a millionaire should pay $100 in taxes. The counter to that is if a person pays 10% in taxes, a poor person, the rich person should also pay at least 10%, if not more, because he's only rich because of the security and the laws and the infrastructure that was paid for by everyone in this country. And, you know, it's just a matter, you know, what's your philosophy? Should everyone pay? Should they not? You know, now, thinking about it a little bit, you know, it's there is a good possibility that businesses will do very well off of this tax bill. These are going to be permanent changes, not just like the one-time tax, a little tax holiday to repatriate funds. This is going to be long-term until 2018 and the 19 and then MLN, we get voted out, GOP gets voted out and all that. But these long-term effects are going to mean that typically what happens is a business is going to start paying out higher dividends. You're going to buy back stock and pay CEOs more. What you don't see is a business saying, hey, I have an extra $1 billion now. I'm going to start raising everyone's salary.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know what planet the GOP is on where they think that happens, but it doesn't happen. I mean, they can point to 1 out of 1,000 companies that actually do that, but none of those companies are going to be within the Fortune 100. In my mind, it is nothing but a big taxpayer-funded gift to the rich and to business.
Mm-hmm.
How much economic stimulus it'll have? It'll probably have a fairly significant amount of economic stimulus. The problem with that is the stimulus is not going to be evenly spread. It's gonna have this whole teetering and tipping and shrinking of the middle class, growing of the lower middle class and poor people, while the rich continue to secure even greater percentages of the nation's wealth.
Mm-hmm.
And the GOP's mindset is to concentrate wealth, concentrate power, concentrate influence, everything with the rich and business, and then have those things concentrated into just a small number of businesses. But you know, and that's just the whole thing. You know, the GOP talks about small government. How do you get small government? You outsource it to a private company. You know, outsource your police force, outsource government agencies, allow businesses to create monopolies, get rid of rules and regulations so you have more polluted air, more polluted water. But the businesses are doing fine. Now, the common folk and the citizenry are suffering, but they can always point to, look at those economic numbers. You know, this is only happening because this is what the market will bear.
Mm-hmm.
Never mind that there's only 2 or 3 companies that you can... That's all your only choices. Hey, that's what the market could bear. And don't forget, the lawmakers are rich.
Yes.
So they themselves benefit from this. You don't see the everyday lawmaker, you know, they all have accountants. They all have deep into six-figure incomes, and they're kind of detached in what it means to live paycheck to paycheck. They don't know what it means to have to make a decision, should I buy this or that? You know, they just buy it because they want it. They don't have to make decisions on how much do I need to save to get this done or that done. You know, to me, it's totally unethical that they're willing to give more businesses and rich people tax breaks, and yet children that can't afford, you know, these are kids. You're going to drop 9 million children and remove their health care, let that expire, because you're taxing the rich too much, and they're covering too much. You know, and it's just a matter of philosophy and principle. And, you know, the GOP to me is just a group that has, they have a philosophy, but they lack no moral backing, no principle. No principle that I want to subscribe to, at least.
Yeah, and it, earlier you said how it's possible that with the tax plan it could trickle down, right? It is a possibility. I will give them that. It is a possibility. But like you said, it's not going to be any of these major companies. It's not going to be like, you know, the Forbes be on the Forbes list and like that. It's not going to be these major businesses. It'll be like the smaller mom and pop businesses that are probably may pay their employees more, right? But we're looking for the big businesses to pay more to their employees to make sure they have a better quality of life without raising their prices, right? Mm-hmm. That's how it's going to go down. If they do in fact actually, if the big brands actually do in fact raise their raise their employees' quality of life, right? We, the consumer, can now see an increase in what we pay for these things, right? And of course, the GOP is simply going to say, well, look, you know, hey, it's there, the proof is there, it's a better quality of life for the people working there. But now, what about the rest of the people that are not in this company who now have to buy these products at an inflated rate because this company is paying more? So it doesn't, to me, it's not going to work. It's not going to necessarily work if they decide to pay more to the employees but raise prices. So it's either one or the other. You either just raise your employees' quality of life, or it's not going to work at all. There, to me, there's no middle ground in this, because we all know if they raise employees' quality of life, they're going to raise their prices on the back end. And that's just how it's going to be. So,
well, and there's multiple things to go on with that as well. You know, as incomes increase, the middle class buys more. The economy starts to heat up. Next thing you know, interest rates are going to keep going up. We try to slow that down. That's how the U.S. works. They just keep economy accelerates. You raise interest rates. You know, we don't accumulate as much debt, and we can start actually paying down the debt. You know, this whole Republican thing, you know, they talk about, well, you know, businesses are going to pay more in dividends. Well, the average salary in America, you know, somebody making in the mid 50s, they're not making squat on dividends. That's not where their income is.
Mm-hmm.
Dividend income is for the people making $1 million and more, the top 0.1%. Well, you know, there's a small percent, and that's the other thing. Most millionaires don't have a salary.
Right.
Most millionaires collect dividend income. The few millionaires that do have a salary get taxed at 30, whatever the new percentage is going to be. But that rate's going to go down. They're going to get about a $60,000 tax break. So, you know, professional athletes, people that get a salary, they're going to get a real big tax break. The people that are millionaires that get dividend income, well, companies are going to get this massive windfall. They're going to buy back stock and increase dividends. They're going to get huge salary increases with minimal tax burdens. And even with all of this stuff they're talking about, a company can still outsource the jobs overseas to China, where the cost of labor is cheap. Outsources to India, where the cost of labor is cheaper. Philippines, Vietnam. And they can write off the relocation, because that loophole or benefit to corporations was not closed. So this perceived notion that all these businesses are going to do the right thing and bring jobs back to the U.S., well, they're already making billions of dollars. They have more money per capita on a percentage basis than they've ever had in history already. And we see what they've done with it. They pay more in dividends.
Mm-hmm.
They buy back their stock. They increase executive compensation. What they don't do is increase worker wages. If anything, they slash workers, outsource those jobs to and continue to show increasing year-over-year profit gains. So, the whole thing is a farce. This plan, how much stimulus they can point to, we can make a number say whatever you want. The reality is, how much more money is going to be in your pocket, and how much more is going to come out of your pocket. And, how many people are going to be worse off after this than, there's a few people that are going to be better off.
Yeah, there is.
But the majority are going to be worse off.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot more. 13 million without health care, 9 million, starting the beginning of the year, 9 million kids, no health insurance.
And that was, I was going to touch on that one as well. This is the part of the GOP tax plan was chopping Obamacare. Like, literally, was chopping Obamacare. That's what people don't fail to realize. As many low-income Republicans are on Obamacare, you would think, you know what? Maybe I don't want to bite my own foot off. But there are people that are low-income Republicans and even middle-class Republicans that are voting for this. I am literally like, how do you vote for something that's going to potentially strip away your health care? Your health care. This is what your kids depend on. This is possibly what you depend on. But now you're voting in favor of removing it. And you're voting for this in the hopes that the Trump administration will have something better for you. Proof is in the pudding. Proof is in the pudding in this case. I said, and I've said this before, and I didn't agree with how Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act rolled out, because to me it was no proof, right? And so, but it's improved people's lives. So that's why I'm on board. But just to literally slash care at this point, it doesn't make any sense to me. You're talking about in less than a month, people are going to be without health care. And what is that? And what does that now do to the market as far as health care? What does that do? Now we got a bunch of sick people that cannot go to the doctor. We got a bunch of sick kids that are just going to be sick. You have more parents taking off of work because they got to stay home with sick kids for extended periods of time. I don't know, man. Like it's you got to
really think about that. Stimulates the economy, right?
Hell no, it doesn't stimulate the economy. Hell no, it doesn't stimulate the economy, man. And it's tragic that people just cannot see that. And that's all I got on this one, man. Anything else before we move on?
You said the proof's in the pudding. This goes back to something I've been saying for lights went out for over a year, that there's going to be a lot of pain with this new administration. The poor and middle class GOP Republicans that voted for this Orange Clown are going to have to feel the pain of their decision. Unfortunately, the rest of us that didn't vote for them are going to feel some of that pain as well.
Mm-hmm.
But they need to feel the pain of their decision. And then they're going to feel the backlash of, you know, I think they've really woken the sleeping giant with millennials with this net neutrality thing.
Mm-hmm.
And taking away health insurance, seeing just how inhumane, indecent, greedy the Republicans are, and, you know, just flat out completely unethical, you know, and millennials have had it real easy for a real long time. They've had fairly stable government that works kind of mostly for the people, and a really good deal under Obama, which is what most of them remember. They don't even remember, you know, largely don't remember Bush. And, you know, Obama's kind of riding the ship, trying to close that gap between the haves and the have-nots.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's just been turned on its head, because the haves, for some reason, feel like if more people also have stuff, they're going to lose something. And that's not the case. And that's just greed. No. And that's all I have. You know, they're 2018 millennials. Bring your tails out there and vote, please.
That's it. Get out there and vote, man. Get out. All right, so let's move on here to this next one real quick here. Last week, Doug Jones won in a ruby red state, Alabama. Now, some people are saying, well, what, you know, he won, so what? Some people are denying that it was a major win, this, that, and the third, right? But this was a major win. This was a major win if you support a liberal America, basically, if you support liberal policies. But this is also what Mitch McConnell did. Let's discuss that really quick. From what I'm reading, he's not going to confirm this guy. He didn't want to confirm him. Why? Mm-hmm. Because this goes back to the GOP tax vote. It goes back to that. It goes back to the fact that he does not, he knows that if Doug Jones gets in the Senate, he knows how he's going to vote. And so he's not going to confirm him until after the GOP tax plan becomes law.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, congratulations to Doug Jones. You may never see this. You may. And if you do, congratulations. But we need him in the Senate. We need him up there flexing his vote, flexing his power. But we can't get that. And that's absolute hogwash. Now, I've seen this in the past where, you know, politicians do this kind of stuff where they will scale back on certain things, but when it's in favor of them, then it's, oh, well, we have to hurry up and push this. And again, that's politics. It is what it is. There's nothing, you know, there's nothing can be said or done about that one way or the other. But at this point in history, if you're looking at what could possibly happen and how it can be stopped, Doug Jones being in the Senate is absolutely imperative right now. So I'm going to throw it to you, man. What do you got, bro?
Yeah, congratulations. Congratulations is definitely in order. Congratulations to all the people that put up with the voter suppression and the people that went out there and walked those streets and got people out to vote. I heard it was for a special election. It was a huge voter turnout.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
black votes matter.
Yeah.
Just know that America.
People got out there to vote and made a difference. And it was huge. You know, it's dirty politics, what old Mitch McConnell said. But at the same time, it's not the end. It's a long road to the end. You know, they're winning some battles right now. The war is far from over. And when the impeachment comes, that's when Doug Jones's vote is really going to matter. Because when the call for impeachment comes, it's already hit the floor of the House once, and I believe 48 House members voted for impeachment. Just a symbolic vote. But at some point, it's going to get the majority necessary to remove the president.
Mm-hmm.
And when that happens, hopefully 2019, we're actually going to get a new president. And that president will be a Democrat. Because Pence isn't going to hang around.
You know,
his hands are too dirty.
You know, we did discuss that the other day. I don't know 100% agree with you on that one. I think his hands are dirty, but are his hands dirty enough to where it couldn't be salvaged? The administration couldn't become the Pence administration. Like, is he that dirty? Because we know Trump is that dirty, but is Pence that dirty?
Pence may resign and get replaced. In which case, whoever his successor is, will be president. But if he doesn't, we'll lose the president and vice president. The House and Senate will flip, and the Speaker of the House, which will be a Democrat, will sit out the remaining term as president.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at that point, you know, there's going to be a major house cleaning of government offices, rehiring of Obama era people, and kicking out of Trump era. I hope we don't lose any more Supreme Court justices or no other positions come available before that time. I think as soon as a position opens up after a Democrat is president, Clarence Thomas needs to be the first. But I think there's a lot of hope and opportunity for Doug Jones moving forward. You know, this tax bill isn't going to last. It's gonna, when the House and Senate flip, they're going to go through and change the tax bill. And hopefully we'll get some real tax reform, a true simplification of the tax code. I mean, they left the alternative minimum tax in, so you still got to do your taxes twice. They don't want to do a flat tax. They don't want to get rid of deductions for businesses and actually truly lower the rate. So, you know, there's that thing. There's your tax, and then there's your, what you actually pay. And just because, like a millionaire, they say a millionaire pays 39% tax, they don't pay 39% tax. You pay up the scale. So that first $10,000 gets, you know, that 10, 12%, the next all the way up until you get over that 200, whatever the limit is, and then you pay that percentage on that portion of your income afterwards. Mm-hmm. So your effective tax rate is something much smaller than that tax top tax bracket. So, you know, people don't know quite, I think a lot of people don't understand how the tax code actually works. Just because you make a million doesn't mean you suddenly have to pay 39.6% on all your income. You pay 39.6 on whatever income falls after the previous tax bracket. So, you know, the effective tax break for businesses and stuff, a lot of businesses end up paying no tax. And you know, these guys need a break. I don't understand why GE and ExxonMobil need a break.
Exactly.
They're not paying taxes. So, but, you know, they have it rough. So.
Yeah, and that's one of the tragic pieces in itself is these big companies that are getting these tax breaks. They don't need a tax break. None of them actually need anything. They're O-damn-K. You know, like this whole thing with corporate welfare and things that are like that. I get so irritated when people say corporate welfare is beneficial. I'm like, what? You know, It's hard for me to swallow. But the simple truth of the matter is, Doug Jones has the win, right? We need this man to get in there and do what needs to be done. The longer he's held out, the longer we'll see stuff like this. And it's just truly unfortunate. So let's talk about it, man. Let's talk about net neutrality. Let's talk about what that really means for everyday people. You know, let's start with the lower and work our way up. If you're a lower class, a lower income earning American, and you lose your access to information, to me, that's the same as closing libraries. That's the same as closing stuff off to you, right? I was actually looking for this skit that Chanel had put up, Lady J had put up on her Facebook page, and I couldn't find it, but basically, it was along the lines of, there was a spelling bee, right? Or academic academic bowl, whatever the case may be. And essentially, two separate teams, right? And one team had basically access to everything, right? Had a computer, had all kinds of stuff, right? And so with that, the other team just had books, and they had to research the information by going through books. Now, I mean, if you want to take it to that level, from that perspective, if you really think about what that means, like think about the bigger, grander scale here, that's essentially what net neutrality does. It restricts information to people. And when you and unfortunately, the people that are normally restricted are lower class people, right? So that's the unfortunate side to all of this. It's not going to affect the upper crust, as they'll say. It's not going to affect them. It's going to affect the people that are in lower income neighborhoods that can't afford this type of stuff. So, you know, this is going to be a major problem. This is going to be a major, major problem, not just politically, but just, you know, for regular everyday people, man, for regular everyday people. So I'm going to throw it to you, and I'm over here trying to search for this video. So go ahead, man. Give me your thoughts on this.
Well, here's a thought for you. Picture this. Picture, like right now, you have a major highway, 5-6 lane highway, all moving in one direction. And you have one or two HOV, you know, high occupancy carpool fast track lanes. You know, in the fast track lanes, you got one or two of those lanes. Then you have 5 or 6 regular lanes. Mm-hmm. That's the current state of the internet. Net neutrality. You take away net neutrality, you reverse it. Everybody gets over the one or two fast track lanes. Now that's the everybody lane. And the people willing to pay get the whole rest of the highway. The other 5 or 6 lanes is available to them because they're willing to pay. Mm-hmm. And that's essentially what net neutrality is. You know, how, you know, think about your data. Think about, you know, your content now. If someone doesn't like your content, if Fox, you know, Rupert Murdoch or the Koch brothers, they don't like the content that you're looking for, you don't get it. Mm-hmm. If they can slow down the search results to, you know, you do your Google search, they can slow down those results. Once they don't like you, they can slow you down. You know, they don't like you anymore. They don't like the Daily Show. They don't like, Comedy Central anymore. Mm-hmm. Definitely don't like CNN. Start slowing down the streams. You know, those companies are large enough where they could buy, the expensive access for themselves. But that doesn't necessarily mean their viewers can buy the expensive access. So You know, they may be able, you know, it's net neutrality is like saying, hey, we treat everybody in America the same, regardless of race, creed, color, you know, gender identity, national origin, whatever. Without neutrality, we say, we treat everybody the same in America if you can pay for it.
That right there. Right there. If so, you don't have the money, then you're not worth it. That's basically what it boils down to, man. And that's it's such a slap in the face. Because not, you know, it's crazy when, you know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Well, the internet, for many people, is pull yourself up by your bootstraps.
That's those how are the straps.
Those
straps.
Are the bootstraps. That's how you get your information. That's how you get the knowledge, you know? That's how you get all this stuff. That's the information. That's the knowledge. And so it kills me when people are just like, oh, well, you know, we can restrict this and everything is still fair. No, that's not fair. That's not fair. Could you imagine you growing up in D.C. and you didn't have access to all the information, right? Because when you mean you were coming up, it was go to the library, pull out a card, pull out a little card. The card tells you this. You go find the book. You find the book. You got to look through the book.
We decimal system.
Exactly. We had to go through it like that. Well, now the internet has given access to people that generally wouldn't have that kind of access to information. There are some people who just are like, you know what? I'm not walking to the library. But they can pull out a smartphone, type in something, and get the information they need. They can figure out what MLA means, what APA means. They can figure all this stuff out. They can figure out what's going on in Afghanistan. They can figure out what the president's doing. But when you restrict information, you restrict knowledge. Restricting information means restricting knowledge. And that's why I this is a problem for me.
That sets people up. That sets up your nation to fascist control. Fascist control is all that really does. You know, that whole thing with information, you know, it's and pulling yourself up by your bootstraps. You try to compete against a large company. You know, who is competing against Encyclopedia Britannica as far as getting information out? Maybe what, National Geographic, another small organization? How did the everyday Joe get out there and compete? There was no way. Then the internet came around. You got guys like Google. You have Wikipedia, which is not a legitimate, quotable academic source, but it's a good starting point if you want to kind of get some references and kind of, you know, whatever. But it's not a legitimate site, guys. Come on. Next person that quotes, I don't know, Wikipedia to me. But anyways, you know, those guys, you know, that's how they get, you know, that's how you compete against those larger businesses.
Mm-hmm.
The internet opened up opportunity, and, you know, how'd you compete against Sears, JCPenney? How does Amazon do it? You know, it was the internet. You know, online retailing, online music has breathed new life into the music industry to the point where they're repressing vinyl. You know? It's the market changes. Those companies, those larger companies that were unwilling to make the investments and change, well, you already know. They're dying. They're falling apart. They could not see the future or would not embrace the future. And the internet was the future. Now, the government's coming in and saying, well, wait a minute. We want to control that now. So that way, and it's not even the government controlling it. It's the four or five large businesses, large companies, have lobbied our government, our representatives, to give them control of what we see here and how we can distribute that information. I say no. And I will resist and fight that. You know, And so that's why I cannot support the GOP and people who vote with them. Can't do it. Put that out there right now.
Yeah. And earlier, man, let's take a few clicks back to what you said earlier about millennials and how it affects net neutrality affects them. There are so many millennials in this day and age, and I actually have done a lot of reading on this. Millennials are literally going the non-traditional route in regards to how they work and earn a living. A lot of them are like, you know what? This internet is an easy way to do it. They're literally like, you know what? We can be social media connoisseurs and teach folks how to use their social media for a decent price. We can do all of this from a bar in Cancun, work for a couple of hours a day, and then they go home. Or whatever the case may be, wherever they're working from.
Back to surfing.
Yeah, wherever they're working from. Whether they're working from a bar in San Diego or they're working from some lounge in Las Vegas. It doesn't matter. They've figured out a way to make money the non-traditional way, right? So now when you start affecting people's income, which is what this is ultimately going to do, this is ultimately going to affect people's income. Now you're going to start seeing millennials really step up, right? And you're going to keep calling us snowflakes. Well, I'm not a millennial, but you'll keep calling them snowflakes and this, that, and the third, and they're going to literally take your cookies and they're going to eat them in front of you and tell you to go piss off. That's what's going to end up happening here.
You know, it's time for a third party.
Oh, it's been time.
I mean, unfortunately, what the reality largely has been, the Republicans are greedy and in a corporation spot. But unfortunately, the Democrats have been greedy as well and been in a different group of companies' pockets. The only difference between the Democrats and the Republicans is the Democrats will at least give that child health care. The Democrats will, while they're taking money out of your pocket, you'll at least be able to go see the doctor. Republicans like, no, nah, we're not giving. I want that money too. You know, the amount of greed, the amount of inhumanity shown by the GOP is insane. You know, it's time for a party to come up that's actually by the people, for the people, and not for, you know. You can do what's good for big business or for businesses, but it doesn't have to be big business, but just for business in general. You know, you provide them a framework in which to operate, rules and a level playing field, just like for people. You know, the fact that we have massive businesses means government has set up so many roadblocks that there isn't any competition anymore and allowed these businesses to grow. No, you think about it. How does an ExxonMobil get to be as big as they are? It's not because they have such a great product. It's not because they have so many resources. They got all those resources because, one, it's too difficult to start a business and compete. Why hasn't there been any new car companies? Because they're so difficult to actually compete against the existing car companies. You know, you have to take your brand new car that you're working on and go crash it someplace. You know, at the same time, you know, you've got to have some rules and some regulations to, you know, but a lot of times the rules and regulations are so onerous that you cannot compete unless you have massive funding. So, you know, then you end up with these monopolies. So that's government's doing. And that's where the GOP has kind of hijacked the message and, you know, and come out with, yeah, we're all about small government, there's too many regulations. And they're right. The problem is they don't do anything about the regulations to prevent businesses from getting big and making more competition. What they do is they say, well, how can we get these big businesses to make more money? I know. We're going to slash environmental protections. We're going to give them our national parks and public lands to go mining in because they're pristine and haven't been touched. You know, there's virgin land there. We can get, you know, we can rape, pillage, and plunder that and make all kinds of money. And we as consumers will buy that stuff and continue the whole cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And then vote the same damn idiots back into this.
Exactly. Yep. It's a vicious cycle in that regards, because one side will mess up, and I will never say that Democrats are perfect, because they're not. That's why I tell people I'm the most liberal conservative you'll meet. That's the nicest way for me to put it. There are things I'm very liberal on. I'm very liberal on women's rights and reproductive and all that stuff, equal pay. But there are parts of me that are fiscally conservative. I'm like, hey, if you can go get your ass and get a job, you should take your ass and go get a job.
Right, contribute. Right.
I am believing in that. But at the same time, you know, like I said, liberals, not perfect, right? Conservatives, definitely not perfect. No one's perfect. But at the end of the day, man, you've got to have a third party to come in, a third option. That's, even if it's not really all that damn good, you just got to give people more options. We keep trying to say, oh, the Green Party was good. No, it was not. It wasn't. It wasn't the best options. They presented options, not the best options. And so, with that, you know, I don't know how to say it, man. I would love to see our government transition to kind of what the UK is doing. I mean, where are they at? Like 16
parliamentary government. Yeah.
You know, there are like 16 different major parties. It's like, it's crazy. I think that could benefit. I think that could actually work in this day and age. I really and truly believe that it could. But right now, it's either you're a liberal or you're a conservative. And that's really what it is. And that's just, it's sad that that's where we're at in this country. You only got the two options.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And that's just, it's tragic. But anyways, Chance, what are your final thoughts on this one, man? Before we need about 5 more minutes and we'll be done. But you have any more thoughts on this one?
You know, we were on net neutrality?
Yeah.
So I don't think, the full implementation of dismantling net neutrality is... I don't think it's actually going to happen. You have states that are already passing rules and looking at laws to render net neutrality null and void. California is looking at passing legislation that says anyone operating in California, 12.5% of the population of the country, you have to, treat all content the same. At some point, it gets too expensive to break that stuff out. The problem is they don't have to in every state, because you're going to get states like Alabama, Kentucky. Actually, let me take that back. I think Kentucky actually is filing suit because their attorney general, their AG, is a Democrat. So he's joining that lawsuit. States are suing FCC to reinstate net neutrality. So I personally don't think it's going to happen. It might, and that'll be more of that pain we're talking about. We're going to have to chip in some bucks to get this podcast out there, because it's going to get blocked.
Yeah, and you know what's funny? All jokes aside, Chance, I hate to interrupt you on your last point for this one, but the missus and I have already discussed that. She says, with this could affect your podcast. She said, we may have to come out of pocket for real to get to really make sure people hear what you're trying to say. So, yeah, and I'm prepared for that. You know what I mean? Like, I do my little overtime. I'm at to just start deflecting the overtime money to getting this going. Because, like I said, I'm not just in here for my health. I want to do this and make it big, make it real. And that's that. But I am mentally prepared for this could come out of my pocket for real. For paying for this. So I'm ready. But go ahead. I'm sorry, sir. What was your, as you were finishing?
Oh, no. That was it. You got me right at the end.
Okay. Perfect. So last thing here, we have one village idiot, and I'm going to start streamlining the village idiots here. This week's village idiot is Omarosa. And Village, I need you guys. I need you guys to ride with me for a second here, and I'm going to show you what the Village thinks of Omarosa.
Go ahead, Angela. I want to hear you, and then I do want to talk about the black vote in Alabama. That's
I want to talk about the black vote too. But Brooke, I'm going to do what you can't do, and what April and Simone are too good of people to do, and that's just going to be petty for a minute. Ah!
Oh, Angela.
Ooh,
oh,
bye, Angela. Girl.
Oh,
bye.
Angela.
We did it already on the podcast, April, but bye, honey. You have never represented the community. You are skin folk. We don't own you like Zora. Goodbye. Oh. Good riddance. Goodbye. Deuces.
Angela,
ouch.
Angela, you know I have much love for you, but you know what? I don't delight in anyone's demise.
That I'm not delighting in her demise. I wish her the best, but
I don't think... I can just speak for myself, and maybe some other folks that folks weren't necessarily sad to see Omarosa go today.
All right, Village. Village, that's our Village idiot, Omarosa.
That
girlfriend,
was awesome.
Turn in your card. You've been rejected. Chance, my brother, how do they get a hold of you, sir?
Hey, you can hit me at Chance W. Brown on, what is that? Oh, at Chance W. Brown. Twitter. Hit me up on Twitter. You can hit me up, catch me at Welcome to the Village page as well. I'm actually on there.
Yes. Yes, you are on there. All right, Village, you can hit me up at Enlighten My Mind. I also handle the Village Twitter handle at W2TheVillage. The show can be heard through Stitcher Radio, iTunes, Podomatic, Tumblr, and Chance. We are now on the Google Play Market, if you did not know. We are now on the Google Play. Yep, we're on the Google Play Market now. We got approved for that about 2 weeks ago. I've been working with them, and I got Google Play. So it's a day-to-day. But again, yeah, you can hear the show on Stitcher Radio, iTunes, Podomatic, Tumblr, like I said, Google Play by searching Welcome to the Village. The Crowdcast replays can be heard on our YouTube channel that you're probably going to be able to watch. Hop on YouTube, search Welcome to the Village, and there we are. If you want to send us a Google voicemail or even a text message, I get those as well. 619-202-1562. We also have, that's not a big deal. I can just say that later. Email, welcometothevillage@gmail.com. Website, welcometothevillage.wixsite.com/website. If you simply subscribe to the Crowdcast channel, our Crowdcast account, you'll know when we go live. So you guys won't even have to worry about it. We'll go live, you get notification, and then we'll go from there. All right? Any kind of advertisements. We are still on Fiverr. We're still looking for sponsors, people that need to be sponsored. If you are a small business and you're kind of struggling with the whole marketing and affording the branding and all that stuff, come to us. Let us help you out. We have a package that's probably a good for you. And last but not least, the Etsy page. I haven't put up anything new on there recently, but like I said, the shirts and the wristbands are on the Etsy page. Go to Etsy and type in W2TV, and we'll come up. All right. So Village, as the saying goes, great show, my brother Chance. So Tuesdays, it seems to be our new day. Chance will stay in the office a little bit longer, and we'll do like a quick 1 hour show, get you guys caught up on what we're thinking, what's going on, and we're gonna go from there. Chance, my brother, I appreciate you coming in, man. I really do, all right?
Thanks. Thanks for rolling with me through all this stuff, man.
Oh, no doubt, bro. I told you I wasn't letting you go, man. I told you I was going to figure it out one way or the other. I told you. I said, I'm going to figure this out one way or the other, man. We're going to get you back in here. But Village, as the saying goes, we love you. We thank you. God bless you. Have a great day, everybody. Bye.